lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republic podcast.
Yeah, guys, want to welcome Dario from MotoGP Finance. Guy is growing huge on the socials at the moment, so we had to get involved. We want to have a chat to you and talk about MotoGP and why you're here and what you're the finance guy, I suppose.
And our first Zoom. So privileged right here. For both.
You're breaking records. How great to be here, guys. We've been following you a lot, so it's good to finally make this happen. I know it's tricky this time of year.
Yeah.
So what's your history, mate? You were a rider back in the day. Just give us a brief sort of rundown of your motorcycle career and where you are now.
For sure. A rider back in the day. First learned to ride when I was a youngster. I think it must have been about 2.5. Father used to race motorcycles in South Africa out of Cape Town. Oldest brother, myself, we all won the same 125cc championship. My dad moved on to other forms of racing, into motocross, cars, etc. Brother raced national South African championship. Myself, after winning the 125cc championship, it was a global financial crisis. Very difficult to make money, or should I say get the funds, particularly being based out of South Africa to go abroad. I mean, obviously guys like Brad, it's awesome. I realized there was a better opportunity for me academically to go and study, did an undergraduate double major in finance and accounting, master's in finance, and have been involved in the investment industry, predominantly venture capital, technology industry, early stage tech, fintech for the past decade, out of London, New York, and Los Angeles. And I felt it was time to go full circle. This is everything you guys talk about, everything I talk about with my family, it revolves around one thing, which is motorcycle racing. And I felt that it was really a great opportunity to kind of open up the conversation from a different lens, particularly having now gone the more kind of traditional investment route, and particularly with the likes of the whole Liberty Dorna movement, etc.
Yes, I know, that's massive. I mean, with Liberty coming through, I mean, that's, we felt like, we do obviously a little bit of Formula One as well, and those two brands meeting in the middle, and you're probably the same, that was just a green light to just, you know, for the future, because finances, money, I mean, it's such a big thing with motorsport, isn't it?
Totally, man. I mean, I think it's, and this is a very controversial opinion, and I'm sure you guys would probably share it, you know, as purists for the sport, there is a little bit of apprehension or concern around what Liberty might do in commercializing it and really bringing in new audiences. But it's difficult, right? Because at the same time, it could potentially compromise the craft to some extent, but at the same time, opens it up to new audience, which brings more money and more sponsorship, and then gives all riders from different classes the opportunity to potentially make it in the sport, as opposed to the past where it has evolved into this kind of pay-to-play model, right? Which still plagues the younger classes and, even in part of the premier class today.
Yeah, 100%. It is going to be interesting. Like with Formula One, I guess it's always been a luxurious sport, and they race in like Monaco and inner cities, where motorcycle racing traditionally has been a lot more gritty. And even to this day, like the rider personalities are different. And we even see that when we speak to like OzGP, for example, looks after Phillip Island and all the Grand Prix and Albert Park. They want to make Phillip Island MotoGP better, obviously, as an event for everyone, but they still don't want to lose sight of the traditional fans. So I think that could still be taken a little bit in the whole Liberty Media move, but it's still apprehensive. I'm with you there.
I hope, because I can't say too much right now in terms of my thoughts. I'm still settling after this weekend being in Austria, but I think...
You're in a safe place here. It's okay.
I think the concern is what they do with brand identity, because if you look at it from an investment perspective, Dorna was a really attractive asset. It's opportunity. It's asset light, which means they don't really fork out that much in terms of expenditure. A lot of the expenditure actually sits on the teams, right? Their income comes from media rights and live events, etc. So a lot of that risk sits on others, more so than they provided the platform and an opportunity for a world championship across different classes and even with World Superbike. And so, you know, the financial pressures sit on mostly the others, with the exception of the subsidies that come from Dorna to make things happen. And so we've always talked about this kind of marketing engine that is partially untapped, which we'd hope that Liberty can get the right mix and balance to really do it in a way that helps to support us purists and keep the identity. but to the benefit of everybody involved in the ecosystem.
Yeah, because we're scared down here in Melbourne because we love Phillip Island, but looking to the future and the growth of the sport, it just may not be able to be obtained in the future. And there's the facilities down there are just some of the, unfortunately, the worst on the calendar. So a lot of the riders talk about love it being down there, but you can't fit enough people in. It's 2 hours away from the city. And if you want to be a success like Formula One, you have to be close to the city and to get the most amount of fans. So it's a bit of a scary prospect for us. My parents actually live down at Phillip Island in
Oh, really? Oh,
a
cool.
2 hour drive. And the locals, I don't think, care too much about the race. But for us going down, we've been going down there since we're like 1 or 2 years old. But like it's just, and we talked to some of the riders in the paddock, they're like, enjoy it while it lasts,
Yeah, I think you're right. We spoke about this weekend actually, and about what races might disappear off the calendar moving forward, because they still need to account for more in the Americas. I mean, I know we have Brazil next year. That's not an easy Grand Prix to get to. I was looking into it. I don't know if you've looked into it. It's quite a hassle. North America in particular, and then parts of Asia. I think we can't ignore the fact that there is a massive push towards automotive, and that the Chinese are becoming more and more sophisticated in their production manufacturing capabilities. I mean, obviously there's a whole KTM CF Moto thing, but it's a massive audience, right? We can't ignore it. So I don't know what it means for the calendar. They'll probably try and increase the calendar slightly to match Formula One, which might take some pressure off Phillip Island. I think Aragon's probably one which will is most
One of the
likely to
Spanish tracks, surely one of the
go.
Spanish tracks.
Oh, there's so many.
They just dominate the sport, don't they, the Spanish.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, at this
But
rate, just
the Asia tracks, like even Southeast Asia, like we went to Buriram this year and
oh,
Thailand.
cool.
It was massive, like massive. And it's such a big market. And that, I guess to a degree, it's relatable for them because they all ride. So it's very relatable bikes where Formula One, I
Totally.
guess for anyone, it's cars. Anyone can relate to that because everyone drives. For bikes, it's that little bit harder. Like no one understands. I don't understand how to, go through a corner at 200 kilometers an hour, but at least I can have a crack. I ride, so, but for
But
your average fan, it's a bit different.
isn't that the whole spectacle though? It's like, it's the easiest marketing selling point you could ever think of, right? I mean, just playing that up, it's like, it's spectacular. And I, I'm sure you guys probably feel this pain, but it's part of the reason why I wanted to start the platform to talk more about the business side of it, is there are so many within my network that don't come from racing backgrounds, that didn't race bikes in South Africa or in the US or even in the UK, that when they see some content shared on my personal profile around, Jorge Martin elbow and knee down at a corner around, around a corner at 200 plus kilometers an hour, it's spectacular. And it's even more impressive now, again, going back to the likes of Drive to Survive and how Formula One has opened up the motorsport conversation. So I think hopefully just small things like that, they can really make an impactful difference in helping to bridge the connectivity between the rest of the world and all of us. But you make an awesome point around bike sales and bike markets. And the likes of the US is predominantly car focused. Motocross has always been, something we talked about. I think in the UK there's obviously weather, etc. But also it's something which, and I'm not sure if you guys have spoken about this a lot, but manufacturers are also partially to blame around the popularity of the sport and just being able to affordably enter into the sport in a way that isn't too intimidating. You have to jump on a 600 cc or 1000 cc. Should be aspirational, but to build smaller bikes that are more competitively priced that emulate the design aspects of a super bike and are just more kind of nurturing in that way, in the way that in Southeast Asia predominantly as biking markets, smaller bikes are more relatable.
It's an interesting point you make out, and it makes me think of in Australia, for example, and I've worked in the motorcycle industry for almost 10 years now. And I was working for like selling Kawasaki's in the prime of Johnny Ray, Prime Johnny Ray when he was winning on Kawasaki. In Australia, they not once mentioned Johnny Ray to sell a ZX10. And I just think, isn't that just the downfall right there? Just in marketing, simple marketing.
Dude, oh man, this is gonna, we could talk for hours here. We're probably gonna have to cap this. Like, you look at Yamaha this weekend, right? The bottom four riders.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't
I'm
it?
sitting as Yamaha, and traditionally we always think of the relationship between how your performance on the racetrack helps to sell more bikes. I mean, it's partially why Piaggio put Jorge Martin on a bike, to help sell. But I mean, can Yamaha do that right now? Mean, you might have an ex-world champion, but frustratingly for Jack and for Fabio and I guess Rins and Oliveira, it's performance is just they've regressed. And for a manufacturer, I don't know how you can be comfortable with the fact that you've got yourself in this position. I'm not saying that they are. I mean, obviously you don't know enough, but in terms of the action plan and continuity plans moving forward, it's questionable.
Yeah, it's you're right. I think they're just hanging on for dear life until these new regulations come through or that V4 engine comes through, because they were saying in the media today, they're just riding around in circles and realistically just making up the numbers at the moment, which is just such a bad look for the manufacturer. Back to your point about, we'll talk about Liberty Media and marketing. I think it was the most wild thing this weekend that 5 minutes before the race, I have found out there was a thousandth Grand Prix. I had no idea. We just had our podcast, and I told James during the
I had no
podcast
idea.
it was a
Really?
Yeah, I watched it on the delay, and I was out for the weekend. But and I was a bit under the influence of alcohol the whole weekend. But
It's normally the opposite,
it's
actually.
normally the opposite. But there was no lead up. I didn't see any lead up a week out, 2 weeks out, 3 months out that Austria was going to be a thousandth Grand Prix is a huge milestone. Tom talked about Formula One, how it was in Shanghai. They knew 3 years out they planned for it.
But if Liberty Media was running this event or this sport, as they will, I mean, I think they would have made it 100 times of a big deal. People would have come all around the world to go and watch this race. Like I said, our friend Mark did. I mean, I just think that's a massive step miss by the organizers. I mean, and they had Stoner there, they had Rossi there, they had the 500 CCs, they had all these cool bikes. But realistically, I don't think a lot of the public knew it was the thousandth Grand Prix.
No, there was more of a focus or emphasis on the legends, right, as opposed to the thousands, as you're right. You're right. But this has been, oh man, just my biggest frustration, which is again going back to the simple things that matter most. A thousandth Grand Prix is a massive achievement, but to overlook that, and it's like, oh well, we'll do the guys doing a bit of parade. By the way, I must say, Casey on that Repsol Honda is just.
Cool, huh?
Yeah, it was brought back great memories for us. I mean, I'm sure it did for everyone, but
Yeah,
amazing.
for sure. And it's just sad to see, an iconic bike like a Repsol Honda partnership is no longer there, right? Honda is just kind of just, I mean, they're doing a lot better than Yamaha. But, as you say, low hanging fruit, thousandth Grand Prix, very easy to put a press release out there, very easy to get that in the news, very easy to offer incentives for others to come. Austria was a very expensive Grand Prix. I don't think the calendar has particularly helped because others speaking to locals have said we can go to a Grand Prix on either side of this for much cheaper. There's price gouging in the area.
Oh yeah, big time.
Speaking to a local, right? There's according to Airbnb, one venue was charging 3,500 euros for the weekend.
Wow. Well, I think our mate Mark paid that,
Yeah, really? Yeah, exactly.
and got promised the dream, and then he got to the hotel or the Airbnb, and it was a shared bathroom with fireplace.
Really?
Really?
And Mark's
No.
soon to be wife or longtime girlfriend is quite a, she's
Yeah.
quite an upmarket kind of young.
Doesn't share about.
She's never shared a bathroom in her life, so she fluent sort of lovely lady. And for her to share a bathroom, I thought was the funniest thing I've ever heard. But they paid, like, I think it was 5,000 AUD, so Australian dollars, for 4 nights.
Dude, it's wild, and that's got to impact ticket sales. But also, just going back to the thousand Grand Prix thing, I've just been thinking about it. There was nothing that showed me that it was a thousandth Grand Prix
Nothing.
anywhere around the circuit, in the circuit, in
There
the
you go.
paddock,
Yeah, there you
in
go.
the tunnel. Nothing. at all. I just remember seeing it somewhere prior to the race, and the announcer from a commentary is also in English. They mentioned this, but other than that, zilch.
Yeah, and it's compared to Formula One. Formula One had this date set out 2 or 3 years before it happened. They had all the advertising done. Like, it's a completely miss, in my opinion, because I think a lot of people from around, as I said before, around the world, they would have made the trip. But you want to be there for a 1,000th Grand Prix. Marquez, yeah. Ducati on the podium, as if Ducati didn't have T-shirts that says 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, like,
we won the 1,000th
Grand Prix. I'd buy that. I'd buy that merch. I mean, that's...
Yeah, make a shit ton of money on that merch.
For sure. No. I mean, it's the commercial side, right? So that's why I've always said that I feel that Liberty acquisition, it's like the way the deal's been structured right now, it's all right, we don't know enough yet. We're going to let, you know, the current Dorna Exco continue to do what they do. We're going to use this next year as a learning year. 2027, new regulations come in. We're good at marketing. We're good at promotion with the American media machine, right? Yeah. And we're going to leverage that to try and, you know, inject this thing with some steroids and get it to grow a lot faster. I don't know if that's going to really happen in the next year as quickly as we'd like. And I think it's going to be very interesting in terms of execution and the people that they surround themselves with, whether they're, you know, experienced in the space or maybe, I mean, I know they've made hires of others that are, I don't know personally if they're invested in the sport, but professionally, it doesn't seem like they come from a MotoGP or bike racing background. Some might see that as a positive. Others might see that as a negative. I don't know if you guys have an opinion on that at all.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. Formula One was purchased, I believe, in 2018. So realistically, they got the golden nugget in 2021 when Verstappen and Hamilton had that unbelievable year. We're all locked up. We're all locked up, especially in Melbourne, most locked up city in the world, by the way.
I don't know how you guys dealt with that.
And Drive to Survive was on the TV, and it was like the one thing that was getting a lot of people through, and it just exploded from there.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's going to take a lot for that to happen in MotoGP, the same sort of wave. But for me, it's going to happen. I think investment, and you, as this is your point of view, investing in a team or investing in this sport at the moment is probably going to be the best place in the next couple of years before it absolutely booms.
Massive, those grid slots. The value of the grid slots, that's actually what matters. Even if the team doesn't perform whatever it is, I think that marketing engine in itself, you know, it's like a stock. You might go up and down, but as long as it's heading towards the top right, that's all that matters, right? And we've seen now with the Günther Steiner news coming in, it's a nice little way to try and bridge that connectivity and bring in some fandom and fresh fandom into the sport. But I think, you know, it's tough being a team. I mean, look, economically, the world's in a tough spot, right? Motorsport is, as much as we love it, not necessarily always the, you know, racing departments aren't always priority unless it's part of a, you know, the direct business model. And Aprilia and Ducati have been excellent at doing that, you know, leveraging Mark and Pecco to sell more bikes or at least connect with races or just those that are curious in their brands. I feel like some of the Japanese brands have missed a trick. But I think hopefully we will see, and I still believe we will see more investment come into the sport. Right now, though, is a difficult position because you've got brands or more commercial brands that have said, well, F1 is kind of where the most eyeballs are right now, right? So in terms of biggest bang for our buck, unless we're specifically focusing on a European or Southeast Asian market, it's probably going to make more sense to put our money there for now. However, that price delta, the difference between what it costs to sponsor an F1 team or car versus a MotoGP team, or bike is obviously very different. It'd actually be a really good to do a study on how that gap closes over time. You've actually got me just thinking.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we do.
Well, it's interesting. We talk to our big broadcaster here in Australia is Fox Sports. So they do all the F1, all the MotoGP, and also like our AFL. I'm not sure if you're aware. We have
Of course.
You
guys just beat the Springboks in rugby. You smashed them on Saturday, by the way.
We're from Melbourne, so rugby for us is
not existent.
We always talk about how AFL is bigger than rugby.
We spoke to the guy who runs Fox Sports, and I said, "What's the viewing ratings of F1 versus MotoGP?" And he said, "Look, it's 50%. It's half MotoGP." Oh, really? Which I thought would have been a lot less than that.
Yeah.
So it's got
surprising.
It's got room, like it really does here in this country, especially the female audience as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's boomed Formula One realistically. We go to Friday at Ower Park, and like there's 10 girls to one guy. It is unbelievable.
Really?
Like, yeah, it's the opposite of a nightclub.
Talking of women, I mean, you guys probably saw this post I put up. You know, fastest growing audience in MotoGP or for Dorna, you know, amongst the 16 to 34 year old group as well.
Yeah,
I think you know, that's where there's an opportunity to kind of play into the kind of celebrity aspect of the riders, you know, creating this narrative. I think that's also, I saw a tweet this weekend around why is Dorna focusing so much on the partners of riders.
I
didn't
that
watch
now.
The feed, but they obviously doing that because of the fashion and the, you know, connection, and trying to bring in more of a woman-led audience as well. It's, do you think maybe perhaps Jack obviously plays a big contributing factor to that split? And perhaps if there wasn't an Australian rider, do you think that split would change?
Probably, like, we saw the Casey days, obviously, and it was huge.
So it was sold out down at Phillip Island.
You'd get an extra 40,000 people through the weekends if you got an Australian world champion. And Aussies will always, it's a different culture though, because an Aussie will back an Aussie champion when they're a champion, but it's always hard to then get us on board leading up towards it. Which is very much our culture.
We have a thing called tall poppy syndrome. So as soon as someone gets to the top, they're haters. It's the most, it's a fucked up thing in Australia. And it really is, like, we see it even, no one wants to see people like succeed. Everyone wants to see everyone just like sheeps, just walking and doing this. It is a weird culture we have in Australia. A lot of people don't understand it, but.
But you mentioned Mick Doohan to even people that aren't massive motorbike fans. They know who Mick Doohan is. They know who Casey Stoner is. It's just they're on that upper echelon where Jack Miller will definitely bring eyeballs, but probably not as much as you think. And like what I'm realistically noticing, and we both do a lot in the social media space and learned a lot about it, but I can really see it brewing MotoGP with the young female audience. A massive gap even from last year to this year. You just see that many more reels about riders and that, as you said, the celebrity
and
type.
Followership as well.
Followership has gone up a lot more younger females. We realistically never really saw that coming, but it is. And there's like a lot more fan pages and pages about, you know, just female MotoGP pages. So it is slowly building. It's just brewing. You can just see it. It's wanting to explode. And there all these girls, I wouldn't say all of them, but they all just seem like they were Formula One fans and now transitioning to bikes.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be biased here and say I think bikes are cooler, but anyway, I mean, it's more of a spectacle, and it's more exciting. I don't know. We've spoken about this privately, you know. Also, growing up, I mean, my father used to fly the Ferrari flag every Sunday during the race, right, and during the Schumacher era, etc. And I think. Where was I going with this now? Oh yeah, so Liberty has done an excellent job at taking what has become a less entertaining sport, to be blunt, I guess a boring sport, and bring some life into it. I mean, the F1 movie is the highest grossing movie of the year. And MotoGP, on the other hand, just as a sport fundamentally, is, in my view, far more exciting. Well, bike racing in general, right? The races are shorter. I guess, obviously, aero aside, there's a lot more opportunity to overtake and, you know, a lot of risk involved, et cetera, and other variables in its own way. That is very easy to market. Yeah. So if you could do an excellent job with something that predominantly is much longer, you know, and they've done various or encouraged various initiatives to try and make the sport more exciting. Be interesting to see what they do for MotoGP. But, you know, I'm not sure what do you guys think around this this past week? You know where I'm going with this, probably. Casey was very vocal about this around the new rules and in terms of technology. I agree with him. I was curious what your guys' thoughts were.
Yeah, look, I was doing some research today on it with stability control. It's not really a stability control. It's more of like an anti-high slide control thing. It's yeah. I mean, we're going to too much of that robotic age, aren't we? I mean, ride height devices and everything. That just needs to all be stripped back. And I think Casey's on big on that. And all those riders from
A
that
lot of,
era.
yeah, the old, like my, even Mark Marquez is as well. He's come out, he's been pretty vocal
But
about it.
what it is, and what I've read today is they don't want people high sliding because they don't want these riders in the middle of the tracks. So when you low slide, you slide the track, and then your bike's out of the way, you're out of the way, and it's fine. But racing can go on. But as soon as you're high slide, you're most likely going to be on the circuit, middle of the track, and then that's where all these deaths have been. The last 2 years, I mean, how many? We've had six or seven, young kids die from being hit by bikes. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So.
I mean, I don't know, a controversial take here, but like, guys like Craig Jones or Brands Hatch, eight, like, that wasn't a high side, just somebody was trailing him from behind very close and unfortunately hit his head. Same for Simoncelli, actually. But it's very difficult, and someone might hate me for saying this, but there is a spectacle on a high side too,
100%.
So Tommy, anyway, I've been looking at getting a new helmet.
Okay, right you are.
A replica helmet.
Okay.
So I'm looking at either like a Marc Marquez, Shoei, Rossi AGV, or controversially like a Nakagami Arai. What do you think?
Well, I think Nakagami Arai might be a bad idea because they'd have to build them strong. Repeat hits throughout the whole weekend. So
That's right.
where would you find something like that?
Mate, motoheaven.com.au. They have all the helmet brands that you want. They've got all the racing suits, jackets, big brands, HJC, Shoei, Dainese, Alps. Mate, they have everything. How good's that?
That is so good. And I heard like there's free delivery over $150 as well.
Free delivery over $150. Super, super fast dispatch, which is amazing all around the country. They do an excellent job. You just check out their Google reviews. It's like all 5 stars. It's pretty amazing. They
Or
do a great job.
give the people the website.
Motoheaven.com.au. Check them out. They are the best in the business for all your motorcycle needs. And they've got a parts finder. You can get all the parts you want, brake discs, chains, sprockets, spark plugs. I know that's all gobbledygook to you, Tom, but that is the they are the best in the business. Head down to motoheaven.com.au and they will look after you.
Dude, talking of high sides, actually, I was just thinking while we were getting back online, talking about rider mental health, a couple points around there. Because I think obviously high sides play a part in that if you have an injury. But nonetheless, this weekend, just the Pecco Mark situation is super tough. I
Oh
mean, I think
yeah, 100%.
Martin. So at one point, I think for 14th, you had Martin, who's just suffered huge injuries, come back and alluded to, based on the previous press conference, that it was more around questioning whether his ability in being able to perform jumping back on a bike, right? You have Quartararo, who, despite being paid a lot and took the money, is in a position where he was fighting with Martin and Bagnaia in the sprint race, and Mir for that matter, for I think 14th. He's a four world champion. Mir, who is the DNF world champion at this point, and then Pecco, who was integral in developing that 2025 bike, because you got to remember Mark was on a 23 GP23,
That's right.
is going backwards.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny because I was talking to somebody about this yesterday when we were driving back to the airport. You fantasize about this idea of wanting to be a GP bike racer because you see guys like Mark who make it look so easy, but then you look at guys like Pecco who have, he must be going through a really damn tough time, man.
Yeah.
The same could be said for all of these ex-world champions.
Well, like Bagnaia, I mean, he's had 2 years as being a world champion. Then he's beaten by Martin just in that championship, which was, toing and froing all year. And then he's come in and the big dog Marquez just comes in and just pretty much is wiping the floor with him.
Obliterating
And it's
everyone
not,
and him.
and it's, and as Marquez is a performing out of this world, but Bagnaia should be second. I mean, he's got the talent. It's just all head, isn't it? It's just all up between the eyes. So
12
it's
seconds behind is just, he said it himself, it's not acceptable.
What's the
It
word
just
in the
makes me
paddock?
wonder. Pardon?
What's the word in the paddock? What are they saying? What's the...
Well, the point around, you know, he was integral to developing that bike. So if, Mark was on a GP23, which is, again, as you said, a true testament to Mark's talent. I think, you know, you almost get two types of riders. Those that can just jump on anything and make it happen, and others who just need every little thing to be perfect in order to get the performance out of it. And I think, you know, it's an unfortunate one for Pecco and for Furman on Saturday, you know, just on the dirty part of the track and for various other reasons, you know, supposedly, just to get a good start. But I just don't see how a guy like Pecco could stay at Ducati for the longer run if this is what it feels. Look, I mean, that being said, you know, he turned the which season was it again? I think it was 2022. When he came back,
Connor's 91.
Yeah, exactly, right. Mm. So I mean, you know, as you say, nobody in that grid is a crap rider.
Correct.
But it's
Chantra.
Pardon?
Chantra.
yeah. Well, I mean,
he's the token.
So. Yeah. I mean, you said it on me, but yeah, it's pretty obvious. I think. I would love to see Pecco go to Aprilia, to be honest. But, you know, my worry is just this Ducati thing, which is, it's cool that you're wearing a zip-up. But, you know, we saw it. I'm sure you've probably seen me talk about this before. Like, you know, they didn't listen to Lorenzo and look what happened.
Yeah.
And now Mark is the poster child. So where does that leave Pecco? You know, they have a very good habit of saying, well, not listening, and also saying, well, you know, if it's easier for us to just focus on Mark, then why not? But then that being said, you know, Fermin and Alex are able to perform. So I don't know. It's all the way true. You know, I mean, DG's on the factory bike.
Struggling.
I mean, was on fire.
That's right. So it's a complicated situation that no one really has cracked the code on or knows the answer, because realistically, it's Mark Marquez is just a freak that's making it work. Everyone around him is struggling, and that's, you know, and then you go back to the Repsol Honda days, he was the only one making that work, and look how far that got them. But Ducati just seem smarter in their future and how they're plan, and they've got these younger riders coming through, like your Fermin.
There we go.
They do plan better. And okay, Bagnaia is not jelling up to GP25, but you know, is Bagnaia expected to win 6 world titles as well? Like, I don't think so. So there's always going to be a part in this everyone's career where maybe, you know, he's had his 2 titles and.
Yeah, he's a family guy as well. I think, as you say, you know, if he's been, I don't specifically know what he's being paid, but he probably made some good money. Yeah. I mean, does he need to win 6-10 titles? I don't know. You know, he's a different, as you say, career trajectory to someone like Mark, who's just, you know, guys like him only come around once in a blue moon. You know, it was Rossi kind of before this. So I still think so guys like Lorenzo, you know, if they stuck around, could have done some serious damage as well. But you make such a good point, which is something we spoke about a lot this weekend, which is around continuity planning and teams that are willing to roll the dice with rookies who, you know, and Ducati has really turned things around in terms of being able to build that program. Yamaha, it's not confirmed yet, right, that Jack's moving over to the factory squad?
I keep hearing that they're backing Alex Rins in again for next year.
Nah, but I mean, dude.
You wouldn't think so. Like, if you want to turn that place around, you put 2 young kids in and you put Oliveira and Rins.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a logical decision.
But sometimes, man, I don't know what is going on. I think to your point, and that's what I wonder about this grid and how many riders, how many teams are focused on winning championships as opposed to just being there. And if you're going to just be there, then what value is there in you being there?
At least building to a championship with your manufacturer. And I think when you put in young riders, they're a blank canvas. So a Fertin or an Iguera, you look at Miguel Oliveira or Jack or something, maybe it's good that they can pull different data and ideas from different manufacturers, but sometimes it's that might not work, and you just need a blank canvas where they just only know that and this bike, and then they can develop it from there.
Exactly right. It's they don't have a reference point. That's why it'll be interesting to see how Toprak does next year.
Yeah,
but you know, on a Yamaha right now, I think
doomed.
Yeah,
doomed. With your South African hat on, where's Binder's future lie, do you think?
Oh, it's a tough one. We were also talking about this weekend. Man, you know, weathering the storm with the whole KTM situation, I think psychologically that must have been very tough for all riders involved. I think things have settled for now. And, you know, it's really great to see a good result this weekend. You know, feel a bit sorry for guys like Maverick, who now plagued with injury. You know, he was doing pretty well on that bike. It's good to see Brad has said that he's made a significant step now moving forward, and I think he's starting to rebuild his confidence. But, you know, I don't really know what the future lies for him or what future lies for him in the medium to longer run, because he's been in that paddock for quite a while now. But that being said, what we've just discussed, there are a lot of guys that have been around for a long time. And they stay there. I know he's just had his daughter. So, you know, I think he's starting to become more consistent towards the sharper end of the field. And I'd love to see more momentum there. But again, you know, we talk about the mental health side of things. Yeah, and you see it from walking through, actually, when you go inside the circuit and even in the tunnel. You know, Brad was the poster child for KTM in recent years, and now kind of Acosta's come in, and that's his teammate. And for anybody, I'm sure, when you kind of feel like you're doing this dance between am I still number one or not, it must be quite tough. And I think he's dealing with that pretty damn well. You know, and I think if you look at his record in terms of Moto 2 and Moto 3, been very consistent in terms of and very good in terms of being able to work with his teams to try and get the best results out of the bike. But I don't know what that future looks like. I think it's a lot less clear for his brother. He's just kind of didn't have the best setup in MotoGP, but now with Moto 2 just seems to be going through a bit of a consistently tough time and being a little bit more erratic than
well, Moto 2 is just like so competitive. I mean, there is 15 guys that can win races in that category. It is unbelievable.
Yep. That's deep.
I've never seen it. I don't think I've ever seen a Moto 2 grid like it. Like, it's, and I said to James this on the pod, it's like a changing the guard. You've now got guys that have been there, you know, half a season are up in the top five. I mean, it's unheard of recent years for Moto 2.
Yeah. So, and I think it's going to be a great funnel for World Superbike. You've just said it, right? And I think these guys that are going to come in and really make it happen are going to go to MotoGP. We're starting to see a couple of rumors around some of the guys already getting offers for next year, which is awesome. Some of the others that have become kind of part of the furniture, I think we'll probably move on to World Superbike and try and help that championship, which is something that I guess we haven't even really spoken about, you know, which is where do we see World Superbike fitting in? Because you got to remember, it's also owned by Liberty. And I think it's a diamond in the rough that has been purposefully neglected for the sake of amplifying the MotoGP brand, which would help to substantiate a higher valuation for the group. But you know, only, you know, you got to remember, World Superbike was almost more attractive than MotoGP at one point prior to the Rossi era. Do you guys watch it much or not really?
Look, I grew up watching a lot of World Superbikes, but it just doesn't pull me in like MotoGP. It really doesn't. There's the show's just not there. Like, I get it with Toprak and he's awesome and like Boulanger, but I don't know. There's just something that's just missing in that.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's a diamond in the rough. It's got the ingredients. It's something that's lacking. And I think for me, I mean, it's a European championship, isn't it? Plus Phillip Island.
Oh, completely. Completely.
Like, they need to go to Asia. Why aren't you in Sepang? Why aren't you going to Buriam? Like, there's just so, like, they're starved for motorsport in these
United
countries.
States. They're going to go to the United States.
I know.
States.
They're starved for this kind of sport. You need to be broader. You need to go global if you want a successful, you know, business in any sense. So for me, it's the lack of the non-European rounds, just, you know, and some of these tracks they go to, like Most, like a nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, there's nothing nice about it. Like, you know, I'm not seeing beautiful rolling hills.
I get it because they want to be different to MotoGP. But again, with World Superbikes is also predictable. And I know MotoGP can be very predictable, but you know, it's three guys that can kind of win a race. So, you know, it's just too predictable. And yeah, we've talked about World Superbikes a lot on this podcast, and I'd love to have an answer on how you could change it, but we've just never really come up with an answer besides going more global.
Do you watch it, Dario, or something?
Occasionally. I mean, look, growing up, yes. I mean, look, motorsport was permanently on the weekends. I don't really watch it now. I mean, you might see a couple highlights here and there, or just see what's going on in the socials. But overall, I think the delta in terms of what's required, it's become a graveyard for MotoGP riders, really.
Yeah, well said.
Again, whether that's intentional or not remains to be seen. I wrote something about it for a while ago. I think British Superbikes and Moto America, they've done a better job in terms of protecting their fandom, growing their audiences, becoming more kind of commercially viable online. I mean, when I'd kind of done some research in the first quarter of this year, I noticed that Dorna was not spending any money on social media marketing for World Superbike, which I thought was wild. Mm. I don't know if that's changed now with Liberty stepping in. I think, you know, when I spent time with the Junior GP, because I work with the Fin Network team, the ESBK side of it, like, no one really.
Yeah.
No one cares. That's just the truth. I mean, there hardly any bikes there. You've got to remember, it's also expensive to participate in these things. So where do you go from that? It's very difficult.
Yeah.
I kind of, my fondest memories of Superbike in recent times is probably the Ben Spies Noriyuki Haga 2009 championship right now. But other than that, I don't know. I think very difficult, will be very challenging for a guy like Toprak to try and, you know, adjust to what the MotoGP bike really feels like, being able to be the shop in, particularly with a Yamaha. I think you'll find some of the younger Moto2 guys will probably come in with a bigger bang.
Different times.
Exactly. But I know, going back to the Moto2 side of things, you also got to remember one thing which only really clicked this weekend. You know, the size of the paddock in MotoGP versus Formula One is massive.
Yeah.
You got to account for Moto2, Moto3, MotoE, Red Bull rookies. It's a lot of space and a lot of logistics required to really pull that off. I think the grids in Moto 2 and 3 are a bit, I think Dorna wants to reduce those from what I can.
Yeah, we hear that as well. Mm. We hear that because they want to fit everything onto one plane, I believe, is the rumor of the paddock, because they have one DXL plane. They want to fit all their stuff onto that one plane. And that's why we talked about before, we touched on it, about grid slots and how, you know, how crucial they're going to be going forward, because they're also talking Moto 3 not going to every round. So that's the room in the paddock that I hear.
Man, it's so hard because on the one hand, we've been talking about rookies and continuity planning. Mm. And then we look at Moto 3 and Moto 2. And I just think it's awesome that Dorna has been able to build that platform into the Sunday, unlike Formula 1, where 2 and 3 are just kind of, you know, very different. But at the same time, it's logistically challenging. And what was very surprising to me is that there are people that have been in the sport for a long period of time that don't really watch the Moto 3 and Moto 2 races or don't have as much of an interest.
Yeah, our fans are, a lot of them are like that. Like, a lot of people will go, oh, we watch, like, you flick it on, but we don't really watch it. Where, like, James and I and a lot of real serious fans, like, they know everyone racing at all times, you know, like.
Love it. I mean, Moto 3
Moto 3, we say it all the time, is the best racing on the planet. Pure racing, yeah. Moto 3. Mugello, yeah. Nothing better.
Yeah.
It's wild. So I don't know how they're going to balance this, because also money is a big problem in those classes. And there's a lot of pay to play, and a lot of riders who aren't able to necessarily foot the bill despite signing the contract. Yeah. I find that interesting. I know it's a cash flow thing, but in a lot of other industries, if you're going to invest in something, you pay the money up front, or a large portion up front, and you know, you'll meet your capital calls or whatever it is over a certain period. But in some of these instances, the teams are cash strapped, so they'll take someone and say, look, you know, you'll pay us X by the end of the year. But I mean, you know, then it's but you didn't give me this, or you didn't give me that, or the bike wasn't up to scratch, or I got injured, so I didn't do four races and I'm paying 200,000. So technically, you know, it should only be 120 or whatever it is. And I think that it becomes a problem. So I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of politics involved, and there's a lot of rebalancing in the back end with Dorna in ensuring that these teams stay alive.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting. But as a spectacle of the sport, and you look at the absolute legends of MotoGP, you grow up watching your Valentino Rossi or your Marc Marquez or a Casey Stoner. You watch them through to junior ranks, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where their legend status is also made. And you kind of look at Pedro Acosta, who was similar. David Alonso is on that kind of trajectory as well. Like,
yeah.
I think it is such a pivotal part in MotoGP that differs to Formula One, definitely.
Massive. And it makes it, you know, from a value proposition perspective, I mean, it makes it very compelling to rock up on a Sunday and go and see the event, because you're getting a lot of racing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
This weekend, right, you had rookies, you had Moto E. I mean, I'm not a fan of that. I find it very boring because there's no sound. But there's Moto 3, 2, and GP.
Yeah.
And there's two rookies races. There are two Moto E races. And there was a Legends race, and it was a 1,000th GP. And you had around 40,000.
Yeah, well, 40% down the crowds. I think Hungary's got to be a major impact for that, because you'd have a lot of Hungarian supporters would usually come to that Austrian race, and they just would go, well, might as well go to our home Grand Prix. So I'm sure that's got to be a factor for it. So
same with Bruno.
Yeah, of course. And then, you know, they're three rounds in 4 weeks. So
there was a, maybe they'll save Phillip Island, because this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Right, financially. But then again, as long as Red Bull's involved, and if KTM bounces back, these guys wanna play. Which is also comforting to see that brands that are committed to the sport despite crowd sizes are still willing to put the money in and still willing to play ball, because it's important to their brand identity. And that's what I would like to see more of. You know, which is why I always turn back and say, I it sucks to see the Honda the way it looks now compared to, you know, the prime Stoner Marquez era, you know, which was just amazing to see Casey on that bike, man.
Yeah.
It's so nostalgic, and it just reminds you of for me, maybe I'm just biased, like a different time.
Yeah. It's always, you know, everyone pays a lot for nostalgia, and everyone loves it, and you look back at everything so fondly, you know. And a perfect example is that, like, I look back at 2010, I think, oh, man, glory years of MotoGP, but like 2009, 2010, racing actually wasn't that good. Racing's better now, in my opinion. So it's just funny how you look back on things, and it's different to kind of what you perceive it like. Okay, Marc Marquez is dominating MotoGP now, but it is so healthy. In a way, it's still so healthy.
Do you think, right, so here's a hypothetical. If Pecco was more like Lorenzo in his mindset towards Rossi, you may see him more towards the sharp end?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Pecco is just mentally cooked.
This is the thing.
Like, the biggest downfall in recent history, I think, mentally, has to be him. in this season. I mean, he's gone from this, the glass of the late breakers, you know, nothing ever fazed him. People could put it up the inside and he was just back at it. But now he's getting spooked. Like you saw Binder pass him, or was it Acosta pass him?
Yeah.
He was spooked. It's just a different human being on that bike. I just don't understand. Yeah. I don't understand.
He's never had a chip on his shoulder, but he's always been kind of cool, calm, collected. But I think that's kind of worked for him. But, you know, when you go up against Marc Marquez, it's so much different than going up against Jorge Martin or Fabio Quartararo. And we spoke about this in the pod just before about if Jorge Martin, if he was fully fit going up against Marc Marquez, it's a different ball game going up against someone who is, you know, kill or be killed type of situation. And I think he's just kind of mentally obliterated him with results, if anything.
Yeah, because I know the reason why I asked that question is because it's been quite interesting seeing the commentary, because I put some, you've seen it, I'm sure, some throwback footage around Lorenzo and Rossi. And I know Lorenzo had a chip on his shoulder and still is.
Oh, yeah.
It helped Lorenzo, though. Like, it helped him being like that.
That rivalry was real. Yeah. And, I mean, he really put up a good fight. I think, you know, you're so spot on when you say, I think Martin, at full fighting capacity, wouldn't be afraid to say, hey, Mark, come here. Let me show you a thing or two. At least try to.
At least try.
Whereas I think, as you say, I think for Pecco, it's what's also a bit crazy. You know, he has the mentorship of Valentino and a really good support structure. So I don't know if it's more so him or actually just the fact that Ducati isn't playing ball, which is what's causing him to mentally kind of crack.
I don't think, Ducati don't. I mean, realistically, do they have to? Like, they got Marquez just
exactly
like,
right.
They're so gonna go spend X amount of dollars. Like,
yeah, he's a shiny new object now. If you don't like it, you can defense. We'll bring Firmin, because I think I read something this morning. I think on GP1 around Delinha saying that Firmin is the future of.
Well, did you see the smile on Tardozzi's face when Firmin went up the inside of Bezzecchi? It was like his new son has arisen from the land, and he goes, "Oh my God, thank God, we've got the next generation." Like, it was like a twinkle in his eye, you know?
So. Yeah, but it's brutal, right? This is sports. We forget this. Again, I think some of us have become quite used to this idea of, you know, certain riders being journeymen. And that's got to change.
Yeah, and being Marc Marquez's teammate is the ultimate hot seat, unfortunately. And I think Pedro Pena is feeling that. Very, very hot seat. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I would have loved to have seen Stoner and Marquez's team.
We all would have.
Definitely.
Yeah, man.
Dario, thanks for coming on, mate. We really appreciate it.
Likewise, guys.
This again. We'll definitely have to do this
again. Yeah, let's do it again.
Brain. It's really, really very interesting.
Yeah.
Sure, we got too many things to talk about. I know this was meant to be shorter, but I talk too much. But
well, we've got batteries. Batteries are gone. We've got the laptop about to run out of battery.
Okay, good. Well, anyway, welcome.
Republican style.
I know, it's one thing after another.
But we really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. We'll catch you again, definitely.
And where can everyone find you on social media? What's the Instagram?
Yeah, just at MotoGP Finance Guy. Yep. You also find me sometimes on Twitter. I release some articles at Dario_DeVet. So you'll find me there.
You have to make the trip out, mate, to fill a bowl on before it goes.
You know, I so badly want to come to Oz, but it's Southern Hemisphere summer, right? So it's hard.
Yeah.
I always got to go back home. But
I get it.
It's on the menu. We'll see if we can make it happen.
Thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Thanks. Chat to you soon.
Cheers, mate.
Right. See you later, mate.
Cheers, guys.
Bye. Bye.